Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about blockers, finding your feet, and A Quiet Place. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is a weekly list of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Happy Sunday evening, everybody.
Yay.
Indeed. So this is the third of our catch-up podcasts. So,
and I had to stop Joe from poo-pooing Wes Anderson still.
Well, we just reviewed Isle of Dogs in the last podcast, in case you didn't catch that. And I was just commenting on the Wes Anderson-ness of it all and the shrine to which Wes Anderson prays in his bedroom, which is probably to Wes Anderson.
Okay, enough already now.
Well, you brought it up in the podcast. Wow. So
okay. Keeping it real.
No Netflix picks, so we'll hopefully return to our segment, I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Netflix, sometime in a podcast near you, coming soon. So lots of stuff out while we're not recommending things, but well, there's lots of stuff out in the movies. In fact, Netflix at this point in time has not been getting a lot of views because we've been watching so many movies out there, so it's a good time out in the theatres, but... Let's get into our reviews. We have three movies to cover. The first of which is Blockers, the second was Finding Your Feet, and the third is A Quiet Place. So looking forward to talking about all of these movies.
Yes.
Where would you like to start?
A Quiet Place.
Okay, so you want to introduce that, Rashmi?
Yes. Okay, so I'm sure Joe often feels like this, but a family is forced to live in silence while hiding from creatures that hunt by sound. This would probably be heavenly for you, right, Joe, sometimes?
I was thinking we ought to get one of these creatures and put them in the house somewhere just to keep the peace around here.
Okay, sorry, I'll continue. This is directed, I think, directorial debut by John. No, he's done one before?
He's done one before, yeah.
Okay, so directed by John Krasinski and screenplay by John Krasinski, Scott Beck, and Brian Woods, based on a story written by Brian Woods and Scott Beck. And this stars John Krasinski's wife, Emily Blunt, Millicent Simmons, who we saw in Wonderstruck last year, Noah Jupe, and Cade Woodward. So, who wants to begin in The Quiet Place? Joe.
So, interestingly, this movie kind of came from nowhere, but in the week or two leading up to it, I managed to catch a trailer. I think it had started to pick up some buzz, and I didn't know much about it, but it stars Emily Blunt, and that always gets my attention. She's done some terrific movies over the last couple of years, and... yeah, the trailer looked to me very, very enticing. We can talk about the movie a lot, but in short, I'll say this is absolutely brilliant. It aligns perfectly with what I think the movies can be. It's experiential. It's clever. It treads some old ground, but it does so in a way that we haven't seen before. I have never been in a theater where everyone in that theater is as quiet as they were during the first 20 minutes of this movie. And I think a couple of the people nearly had cardiac arrests while actually in the theater, because the movie does have some very big jump scares. I know that one person in particular on the row that we were sitting in.
He literally leapt out of his chair.
Physically leapt out of his chair. So as a thriller, I think it works brilliantly well. But let's find out what you guys thought and then do a bit more of a deep dive.
Yazdi.
I think this is an A grade B movie, and it's one of the hardest things to do is make an A grade B movie.
That's really
and
well put.
I And I say B-movie with the greatest degree of fondness I can summon. I've noticed my voice has become very solemn, and it usually becomes very solemn when I have great, 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 great love for a movie. And I have tremendous love for the movie. I mean, I think this is John Krasinski bursting onto the film scene. He has directed one other movie before. It's called The Hollers.
I just looked that up, yeah.
And I've actually seen it at the back of a plane, and it's a very, very efficient, very reasonably made movie with a great cast. I would definitely recommend people watch it. But I did not know that he had it in him to make such an efficient, airtight, economical, edge of your seat suspense movie, which at the same time, when you kind of step away from it, you know, you can think about this as being an analogy for a myriad other things, you know, this whole premise of the movie. And it's the kind of movie where after you watched it, you kind of, you know, hit yourself with you hit the palm of your hand on your forehead, wondering why nobody ever thought to make, you know, to discover this premise or make more out of it. It's the kind of movie which in the first 30 minutes makes people very, very uncomfortable because there's no sound in the movie, and it kind of really tries some people's patience, and maybe some people will walk out. But setting aside everything we know about Emily Blunt, everything we know about John Krasinski, everything we know about what the movie may or may not represent, I think if you just step aside and you just sit any person on the planet in front of this movie, they will enjoy it. It almost runs like a silent movie, and there is something so basic and so elemental about the movie that it just works from that perspective. And remember, I hate horror. I hate horror movies. I love the shit out of this movie. I really, it's one of the best movies of the year.
So easily. We were worried when we got the tickets and then we said, shall we tell Yazdi it's a horror? And then we kind of debated whether we should tell you or not. And then you were excited about going to see it. And we were like, okay, yay, he probably knows. So we just kept our mouths shut.
But if this is
a thriller than a horror.
Yeah, I agree. It's not, yeah.
Yeah.
So what a clever idea. I didn't know what to expect. And I like the fact that this is a tangent on the horror alien invasion that we've seen before. Like you said, Joe, this is one movie I've never seen an audience so quiet. Ever. I mean, we always complain about noise and bad habits. This was fantastic. And I've never experienced that lack of sound. And the fact that there's such a lack of sound in the movie just heightens all your senses a little bit more so that you really are sort of experiencing the fear and anxiety that the characters are feeling. And you're literally on the edge of your seat. I was literally glued to my chair and like watching the screen all the time. And at times I wanted to put my hands up in front of my eyes just from the sheer fear of what was to come. I think this is superbly directed and it's really well acted. And as I was watching in the moment, I kind of took it for what it was. Yazdi, to kind of what you were saying. But in the days since, I can't stop thinking about this movie. So when I left the theater, I thought that was a good movie. But since I've watched it, it's risen in esteem in my mind. And I think it's a really good metaphor for any people who are persecuted by another being or idea and the horror they face in protecting themselves.
You know, yeah. I mean, the beauty of the movie in many ways is that, you know, yes, you've referred to it a number of times on the podcast, but that Hitchcockian kind mm-hmm. of thing where we know that there is a bomb under the desk, but the characters don't know that there is a bomb under the desk. So the anticipation rises and rises and rises and rises and rises. And so that's what this movie does so well, because we, as the audience, you know, are a party to some information that the characters are not party to. And the dread, you know, I've never felt as frightened of a nail as I have felt in this movie. You know, there's probably not too much of a spoiler. It's in the trailer. But that simple, you know, device that creates that level of sheer anticipation in the movie, and the way that the movie's, you know, assembled so perfectly, because you said, again, yes, the airtight. It's perfection. And I was a little frustrated at one point thinking, well, you know, what and how and why and can we find out more about? And but then I accepted that the movie was about this little world, right? And you have to question the decision making of a couple that lives in a world where the slightest noise can get you killed of having a baby. You know, you kind of say, well, what is that about? But this movie isn't about that question. It's like, this is the situation, right? She's already there. And so, you know, now they're preparing for it. So again, the lean and absolute sparsity of storytelling here is something that I think in less accomplished hands could be irritating, because you want to know more. It's like, well, what about this? What about that? But it didn't matter, because the movie was such an effective thriller with the world and the very small universe within which it's set, and the enemies, the aliens. Oh my God, how innovative and well realized are they? I mean, we've seen, you know. We saw the movie Signs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. It was kind of very similar to that movie in some respects. But the reveal in Signs really was a huge letdown. When we knew what was coming after the
beacons,
you kind of like, oh, I was really frightened for this stupid thing. You know, when we saw the monster, it was absolutely as fearsome as we had imagined it to be, and I think that is again very hard to do. So perfection.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you step away, there's a lot of plot holes in the movie, which when you're looking at a work so accomplished, I think it's almost irrelevant. Of course there are plot holes. I mean, I think this movie is just fundamentally just a consummate entertainer. It just wants to entertain. And you know, I think, you know, you can't be in the business of loving movies or being a true movie lover or true movie reviewer and not have the ability to truly, completely, irrationally fall in love with a movie. And I'm kind of irrationally in love with this movie. And it's odd because it's a, you know, on the face of it, a horror movie. And again, I want to dispel the myth for people who are worried about horror. I don't think this is a horror. I think this is just exceptionally suspenseful movie. And I've been wanting to just tell everybody I know that they should absolutely go watch this movie. I've been telling everyone I know since I've seen it. So I think the real value of the movie is that it's just a brisk 90 minutes. There is not much in terms of setup. It starts off with the scene in a grocery store in this abandoned dystopian, you know, world, and it doesn't let go from that point onwards. Why is that nailed there? Shouldn't somebody have blunted it? After the first time it happened, somebody should have said, yeah, of course, there's 100 loopholes you can find. And, you know, really, do we need aliens with sounds so much like those? You know, why is it that aliens have this weird cricket sound? You know,
maybe someone has seen the ESD.
But, you know, ever since, what was it, Precinct 13? What was it?
District 9,
you know.
I was watching Hunger Games earlier. I was like, District 13, oh yeah.
But in a way, yeah, exactly. They make this weird cricket-like noise, but...
And always screeching, wee! Like some sort of like...
And in a way, that alien is irrelevant. It could be anything else, you know, and like, mm-hmm. like when you step away and you think about it more from a sociopolitical perspective, and you should not, but if you do... You know, it is essentially about anything that prevents a person from taking care of their own, you know, at one level. And the movie is so smart in its script that there's this whole middle piece set in the movie where, you know, John Krasinski and his wife are separated from the kids, and the two kids are separated. And it doesn't feel cheap. It doesn't feel gimmicky. It feels like, you know, a logical evolution of what's going on with their characters. And you really worry about the safety of these kids. And, you know, I mean, there's point by point, you know, you put yourself in their shoes, like, what would you be doing at this point? And, you know, you forget to breathe. And, you know, you at some point, you just forget that this is a movie made by people, you know, we know as John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, and you're just one with the movie. And again, I'm struggling not to use superlatives for the movie, but I think this really is quite close to a perfect movie. And you know, I kind of ended up the movie thinking, am I watching a future classic? Is this a movie that people will be talking about 10 years from now, 15 years from now? I don't know. I don't want to give too much credit to the movie, but as it stands right now, there isn't a single person I wouldn't recommend this to.
Yeah, I think it defines that whole phrase stuck between a rock and a hard place perfectly. This whole movie is, the situation is you are stuck between a rock and a hard place. There is no good solution or good outcome that will come from anything in this movie. But I think what impressed me the most is there's no fat. We said it before for another review we just recently did, but there is zero fat. Nothing is wasted. Every single piece of newspaper that you see in the background to something you see on the various monitors that are set up to a line of dialogue that plays between a father and a son, to a mother preparing a nursery in this weird world. Nothing is wasted. Everything has is meaningful. Yeah. And that's pretty difficult to do, I think.
Well, I think it's forced in some ways by the fact that they can't use dialogue, right?
Right.
So the whole idea of show, don't tell is a necessity in this movie because the characters aren't allowed to speak. And they do communicate in a limited way. They use sign language. And we need to talk about the deaf girl that was cast as the
scene stealer.
Millicent
Simmons.
Because she was superb. And Krasinski, I think, had to fight to actually get someone deaf cast in that role. But he really, really wanted... Again, it's part of the contrivance, right? In a world without where a single sound can get you killed, they have a daughter who's deaf. You know, wow. How frightening is is that setup? But I think it's a silent movie piece to, you know, the fact that the world itself has to convey the information to you in a way which isn't people saying, oh, and 2 years ago this thing happened to me, which is why, you know, here we are. It's like, you know.
Yeah, and for a movie where your life depends on not making a sound, that's the whole premise of the movie. The aliens will eat you if you make any sound because they hunt by sound. The movie has incredible sound design. So even though most of the movie is quiet, there are scenes where, and I don't know how they did this, there are scenes where you can hear from the perspective of the girl who is deaf. And her silence is somehow more deafeningly silent than the silence for other people. Because for the other people, there's still some background little noises. There's nature noises, etc. And particularly, I think in the last 10, 15 minutes of the movie, the sound design is just incredible. This is a four-parter, right? There's only four main characters in this movie, the husband, the wife, and the two kids. And they're all uniformly great. I mean, Emily Blunt, I mean, he did not want her originally, you know, because it's his wife, it would have been too close. And then Emily Blunt read this and apparently she said she wanted to play it. And, you know,
how good is she in this role?
This is what good actors do. I mean, you know, you can just see, you know, any kind of improv situation where somebody has to pretend that they're scared of some monster, you know, it's the thing which makes you realize how bad an actor you are. And she has, you know, entire scenes where she has to carry a lot on her weight, and she just comes across aces. Noah Jupe, who plays the little kid, he's great in Wonder. He was great in Suburbicon. He plays perfectly a kid who is probably more aware of the reality than anybody else. And he's the only one who acknowledges how terrifying it is. And he is the only one who's like, I can't believe how bad this situation is. And he's the only one who allows himself to break down. And he does a great job with it. So the acting is all around excellent, which kind of, super, of course, is needed. Yeah.
Wrap it up.
So, you know, I think this movie has the feeling of, you know, found treasure. It feels like there's this perfect little gem which was sitting and now suddenly it's been found, and I can't wait to tell everybody, there's treasure here, go find it. You know, I think after this movie, Krasinski was going to move into the top leagues, and, you know, he'll be very much sought after as a director, and he should be. Again, it goes to show that you don't need much. This is a movie which was made with $17 million budget, which is really meager. And it's already made $50 million in its opening weekend, this, you know, and it deserves all the credit that it gets. It's my favorite movie of the year. You know, I did this with Room, and I did this with Short Term 12, as, you know, I was telling everybody, shaking them, go watch this movie. And now I'm doing it with this one. The rare 9 out of 10 for me.
Wow.
Yes. I love this film.
Joe.
Oh, and I don't want to say anything, but the ending is perfect. Okay, I won't say anything more.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably podcast on this for another hour. There are so many little magical things that happen in this movie. I can't wait to see it again. This is hopefully not going to get lost in award season for next year. I hope it does get the thing that Get Out did, because it really is a superbly crafted movie. It's well directed. The performances are perfect and they're memorable. I mean, I think there are so many little moments that each character brings to the table here. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to give this a 10 out of 10.
Wow.
I absolutely adored this movie. And it's everything.
By Nolan.
I know. But it's everything that I hoped it would be in the trailer and then some. And it's fabulous. It's perfect. I don't know that there's any frame of this movie that needs adjusting. It's exactly what it set out to be, and it delivers in spades. I want to see it again. I'm almost sad that I won't have that same experience of watching it for the first time, because and for those of you that haven't seen it yet, go see it, because I'm literally envious of the experience that you're going to have for the next 90 minutes.
I really like this movie. I think it's very, very smart, and there's nothing to stay quiet about. 8 out of 10.
Okay,
we have two very different places that we can go to next. We have Blockers and Finding Your Feet. Where would you like to go?
Finding Your Feet,
okay.
I think only Joe and you and I saw that one.
Okay.
Yes, I'm going to be enjoying that one. Finding Your Feet seems to be another, and I say this with all the fondness and affection, but it seems to be the next one in the line of genial, heartwarming, comedic British movies that come out at regular intervals. And this seems to be the next in line. It's directed by Richard Lon Crane. You know, this British movie has a lot of, you know, British actors in it. But Richard Lon Crane has, you know, 22 director credits. He made Flame, and he made Richard III. He made the movie Wimbledon, you know, a few years ago, which I think might be the most famous movie on his resume. The movie is written by Meg Leonard and Nick Moorcroft, and the short version of the movie is that on the eve of retirement, a middle class judgmental snob discovers her husband has been having an affair with her best friend.
Talking about Joe, sorry.
She discovers that her husband has been having an affair with her best friend, and she's forced into exile with her bohemian sister, who lives on an impoverished inner city council estate. If I didn't know better, this sounds exactly like Blue Jasmine to me. But maybe a very different treatment. The movie stars a who list of British actors, including Imelda Staunton, I believe, in the main role, and then Celia Imrie, who has been in, you know, all the best Marigold Hotels and several other movies here. Joanna Lumley from Absolutely Fabulous is here. Timothy Spall is here. And John Sessions and a whole bunch of other British actors. So I missed watching this movie. I really wanted to. So should one rush out to find their feet?
Okay, so if you didn't love Calendar Girls or the exotic Marigold Hotel number 2, run. This is that same genre. Yazdi, you kind of got it right, I think. Highly predictable from the outset and a little overcooked. You can see all of the set pieces clicking into place, scene by scene, as we saunter to the end. However, despite all of that, it's not bad. It's just not great.
Yeah, this movie is definitely targeted towards a particular crowd, and I would say that particular crowd is a little older. I think it's definitely got that feel to it. It's very competently made. I mean, it felt very much, I couldn't shake the feeling that this was a made-for-TV movie, and it felt almost sitcom-y in its delivery. You know, it felt like it was very small sets, and you know, we had a number of those moments where somebody kind of, you know, ponders something that's been said, and then the scene cuts, you know, very much like a TV soap does, you know, that kind of smacked ass look that people and always, you know, somebody's been hit in the face and they just kind of pause and then it cuts and goes somewhere else.
We should have done this.
But that's to be very mean to the movie, because I think despite all of those things that I've said, it actually carries its story along with real heart, and there's a warmth to it. And yes, you know, we know where it's going, and we know that this character has some lessons to learn, and you know, we ultimately know the lessons that she does learn when she learns them. And somehow the movie doesn't disappoint in that regard. I mean, it's very sweet, and I think you know, it's not trying to be anything avant-garde in any way. It's just a story about a lady that needs to learn some humility. You know, it's funny enough when it needs to be. It's just nice, and that's probably the best word that I can use to describe it. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, I think it suffers because at times it's a little overacted and a little bit too melodramatic at times. And I feel bad for
Imelda.
That's
a soap opera style
writing,
right?
Sure, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think I feel bad because most of that kind of melodrama falls upon Imelda Staunton. But, you know, you can't help but love watching these British greats like Timothy Spall and Celia Imrie doing what they do best. And I love that this is finally a different Joanna Lumley than most American audiences have been exposed to in Absolutely Fabulous. That, to me, was never her strength. Joanna Lumley is an amazing actress. Mm. And I liked seeing this type of Joanna Lumley.
It's a very small part, though, just
it's a very
to be clear.
Small part, but yeah. It's when she's on, she's great. I think they do the best they can with the material they have. I think the movie is really trying very hard to please you. And it does make you crack a smile and even a small laugh at times. I think it's very British, though. A lot of its sensibility is very British. And we were talking about that when we reviewed The Death of Stalin. I think this is even more colloquial. And so I think that some people may have a hard time with that, especially if you're younger. Right. An older crowd may have been exposed to more of those British colloquialisms if they've watched Monty Python and Blackadder.
Well, it's not even colloquialisms, but it's pop culture references.
Yeah.
It's things that you would only, and I say this carefully, but I think the there are certain things that you can only experience by, you know, having lived in England for a very long time. And I feel like this movie is kind of chock full of those little callbacks that,
right,
that aren't all that meaningful, you know, a reference to a TV show that was on,
right,
you know, in the 80s. Who would know that other than people who lived there? You know, especially if it was a show that wasn't, you know,
mainstream
or a song. Or,
yeah. Yeah. So I can wrap this one up, Joe, if you want. I mean, overall, look, it's not a great film, but it's certainly not terrible. And if you've had enough of Black Panther and Pacific Rim Uprising and you can't stomach a large movie that shouts at you, go and watch this one. But know what you're getting. I think a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I like this movie. I mean, it kind of warms the cockles, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It definitely isn't as accomplished as something like Exotic Hotel.
The number
America
one.
Hotel,
yeah, the first one.
I think it does, you know, fall in line with something like Calendar Girls. You know, you said that at the beginning, Rashmi. If that's your kind of fodder, if you enjoy and enjoyed that kind of movie, which I do, you know, it's okay. But it's not one to rush out and see.
It's not even as good as them, I think.
No, I mean, it doesn't hold up to Exotic.
It's the back of a plane. Hotel.
It's definitely a back of a plane movie. Yeah. But, you know, again, if you need to switch gear, it's totally not offensive and it's not a waste of your time. 6 out of 10.
Okay. 6 out of 10 all around. I'll wait till I'm on a plane.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. We're left with Blockers.
Oh,
so
there's one more. I thought we were done.
You were dreaming of our dinner.
Yes. I was salivating, yes.
Well, between there and blocking us from finishing the podcast is Blockers. So I'll introduce this very, very briefly. So Blockers is based on the premise that three girls who are on their way to prom night have made a pact to lose their virginities. Their parents managed to get wind of this through social media / parents slightly spying on their kids unintentionally, and set out to get in the way of their kids achieving their hopeful prom night. The characters, and I should be very clear here, the movie is about three daughters trying to lose their virginity. We've seen the three boys many, many, many times before, but we rarely see this type of story played out from the perspective of three young girls. Movie's directed by Kay Cannon and written by Brian and Jim Kehoe. Stars Leslie Mann in the one of the parents' roles, Ike Barinholtz, John Cena, Catherine Newton. I should probably know the other Geraldine Visanthawan as Kayla, yes. And Gideon Alden as Sam, and Ramona Young as Angelica. So the big stars here, obviously the adults are the most well known of the characters. But guys, what did you think of Blockers?
So have you ever had that experience where, I hope nobody's ever had that experience where you're flying somewhere, you get on the plane pulls out, and then they tell you that you have to wait on the runway, and then you're waiting.
I just had that experience.
Yeah, you're waiting, and then it's like an hour, and it's like 2 hours, and then they just say, forget it, this plane is not taking off, and it brings you back into the into your gate area. That was the experience.
This doesn't sound good to me, Yesti. No,
that was my experience watching Blockers. It was just a movie which refused to take off. I kept waiting for it to take off. And, you know, it wants to be one of these raunchy movies which keeps coming out. And there's nothing wrong with those. I love those. But it felt like it was holding something back. And even when it's kind of being cheeky and silly and there's the usual, you know, naked people, haha, laugh at funny, you know, old people naked, funny. It just felt to me like it had a good heart, but it just was not. It needed lift off, and the premise should have had that, but it just felt like the whole movie felt like it was coasting. And I think in a way, everything that you need to know about the movie is in the title of the movie. It was originally going to be called Cock Blockers, and then they kind of chickened out, and now it's just called Blockers.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended, really. But it's just called Blockers, and Blockers by itself is inane, and it doesn't mean anything. And, you know, the three parents, you know, Leslie Mann, John Cena, and Ike Barinholtz, they just seem so square. They seem like remnants from an 80s movie. They don't feel like parents from 2018 to me. And it seems, I mean, the point of the movie is the kids are so much more matured and kind of with it and kind of more level-headed than their parents are. And I have to completely agree with it. So it just became a silly exercise for me. I just didn't do much for me. Sorry.
Oh, dear. Where to start? This movie is so, 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 so silly and implausible and ridiculous and just, well, silly. But it's so earnest and like a little puppy that just wants to lick you to death and play with you, one can't help but feel an enormous amount of affection for it. Despite its insane and incredulous plot, I found myself really enjoying this movie, and I think it's down to some great chemistry and casting and physical comedy. And I don't disagree with anything Yazdi said. I kind of agree with everything Yazdi said. But for some reason, it got under my skin, and I actually enjoyed it.
No, I mean, my reaction was the way it was because it is so earnest. You know, I don't doubt. I mean, this is not a movie trying to be nasty. It's very earnest, and it wants to please you, but it was just so square for me.
Yeah.
Oh, I find it anything but square. This really? Movie really pushed my buttons, and I've never ever been so happy to not be the parent of a teenage girl in my life. I mean, oh my God. Maybe it's because that premise works really well here, right? So the idea that these parents are horrified by this pact that the parents have made. The kids have made and, you know, set out to block it. You know, I was with them all the way. I was like, you know, don't do this, girls. So it was kind of one of those movies where the reasons that three of them had were like questionable, right? So I was like, right. they wanted rescuing from my perspective.
Yes, but they did. Yes.
But it was very, very funny. I think the movie's humor throughout worked really well. Yeah, a couple of the set pieces are overdone, right? You know, we don't need upside down minivans. You know, we don't need that kind of thing is kind of nonsensical to me. But I think the overall movie had, again, you know, it was really trying to be a kind of a female super bad in some ways, you know, the girls. And I love the perspective that it's just like the girls going out there, because again, I'm so tired of the kind of cliche Animal House frat boys, like, you know, we're gonna go get some girls, blah blah blah. So I think it was genuinely very funny, very entertaining. I think it was a nice little different take on the thing that we've seen so much before. The Leslie Mann, I thought, was really good in this, and yeah, it just worked for me.
I mean, I agree with you. I think it's Superbad meets Horrible Bosses meets every other movie that poor Leslie Mann's been in since the beginning of her career. I mean, she's almost like Jennifer Garner, but in a Judd Apatow movie, right? She's always the mom, or
yeah,
well, you know, but a raunchy version of it. But you know, I think its heart is in the right place. It's genuine in the reaction in some ways of those parents. And I like that the three girls, I like that they're really powerful young women. Yes. They're not wallflowers, which I loved. And I like that it's tackling some difficult topics again. You know, we just watched Love, Simon. Mm-hmm. And I think this tackles that same-sex issue as smartly in some ways.
I would have loved to see a movie just about the daughters, because the daughters are written remarkably well. There's Leslie Mann's daughter, who is kind of, she has her head on her shoulders and she's a little love struck. And then there's the, you know, the mixed marriage, Indian and Caucasian.
Yeah, I love that. It's diverse, yeah, right? There's a lot of diversity.
You know, she's super confident. She's almost too cool. And she, you know, for her losing her virginity is like, yeah, whatever. If you're doing it, I'll do it. She's like,
right, I want to really get this out of the way.
And then there is the other girl, you know, who's kind of struggling with her sexuality. I love the things about her, but I just found that the parents were out of some horrible, cheesy 80s movie. I mean, I really found, they were overreacting, and maybe I'm not a parent, so maybe that's the issue, but I felt like they were just like monkeys. They were like just being clowns.
But I love their chemistry, and I like that these aren't big names. I mean, other than Leslie Mann, these are relatively unknowns in some ways, and I like that it's not your typical, you know, Jason Bateman and Jason Sudeikis, because easily you could have substituted those two guys for those two people, I think. Right. And it would have made it a different movie. But I do like that it was like a C movie, you know.
Yeah. And I like that the Ike Barinholtz character is the one that, you know, starts off being, you know, the most malign character. And then you kind of find out that he's probably the most stable of the three of them. I mean, I will grant that the movie, especially in its last act, you know, it is very funny. I wasn't laughing along as much initially, but I never laugh in movies. So.
Yeah, I didn't. I think this one, you didn't let the dog take you on the walk for this one, I think.
The dog. Yeah, I didn't like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can wrap this one up. Yes. I so wanted to not like this movie, but I was blocked. Very funny and entertaining. Lots of puppy licks. You know, solid 7 out of 10. It's fun.
Yeah. Another 7 out of 10 for me. I think it had some real genuine laughs in it, and I found it thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining and cringeworthy. And, you know, the buttons that it set out to push were pushed. You know, I mean, there were some kind of moments there that I thought, well, okay, yeah, I haven't seen that before. Oh, I haven't seen that done that way before. So, you know, yeah, it felt very much like a female Superbad.
Not as smart,
but equally chaotic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I think it was the chaos of all of those moments that worked lovely for me. So, great fun.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, two different characters in the movie say almost verbatim that, you know, I'm not some damsel in distress who needs saving. And yet the whole movie is about these parents trying to save their daughters. And they don't need to save their daughters. Their daughters have good heads on their shoulders. And like I said, I would have loved to see a movie about these three girls and them, like their prom night, and not be burdened by these, you know, oafish, clownish parents who are making fools of themselves. So I really didn't like the parents part, but there is a really good movie about the girls and really good writing there. Ultimately, I thought the movie was just trying too hard. It didn't work for me, 6 out of 10, which is very generous.
But don't all these movies try too hard?
Yeah.
I feel like...
Ever since Superbad, I would say, yeah. Right? Like they're all trying to be the next Superbad.
The three girls are great, by the way.
They were. Yeah, they were. They were really well cast and
Do you think the scenes with Gary Cole and Gina Gershon were just hilarious?
Yeah, but it was like, okay, what has, like you said, what has not been done before? Let's try this. But yeah.
So funny. Some of the bits were really funny.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the last of our movies for this week, so let's wrap up the podcast.
We're caught up, yay!
We are, yes. So I'll probably put these episodes out with reasonable frequency. Let us know what you think. Mail at movieallers.com, twitter.com/movieallers, facebook.com/movieallers as well. If you like film festivals, do know that us movieallers are off to cover the 2018 Tribeca Film Festival. So hopefully we can do our usual thing there. Towards the end of the month with daily updates from the fest, and do check out the podcast because it's always pretty heavy with content. So we're looking forward to that, and hopefully you are too. Until next time, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.